The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Yesterday, Ireland confirmed its first case of the Omicron variant, which is potentially more infectious than Delta. It comes on the same day that indoor mask wearing was made mandatory for children from third class onwards. So does this mean that schools are safe, as the government have frequently claimed? Well, for more on this, I'm joined by Christine Losher, Professor of Immunology at Dublin City University. Christine, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
So, with mask wearing and a few open windows and CO2 monitors, are our schools safe?
I don't think that we can really, with the level of community transmission that we have and the level of cases, I don't think we can say that anywhere is absolutely perfectly safe at the moment. I think that we've made a huge effort to make schools safe. I think that we should have done more a little bit earlier to make them safer. And I think, you know, my view on masks is that while there's absolute evidence out there in general that masks can impact on transmission, I don't know if mask wearing as an additional tool now is going to have a significant impact on case numbers in this age group. I'm not saying it's not going to have any impact, but I don't know that it's really going to have that kind of step change impact that we're looking for at the moment. So, you know, I think as regards other mitigation measures in schools, you know, there's been a lot of talk about ventilation. And while this is not my area of expertise, I have listened to a lot of ventilation experts, particularly those who were in the group that the government put together, an advisory group on ventilation in classrooms. And it does seem that there's a consistent message coming from there that HEPA filters would be useful in that environment. And we still don't have those. So I think that there's things that we're doing that are, you know, positive. I think there's some things that we're doing that we're very focused on, like mask wearing, and we're making quite a big deal of them. I don't think they're going to have the significant impact that we need. And I think there's other things that we should be doing and we're not doing, like ventilation.
Okay, mask wearing, though, is a very simple thing to do in a way. I know there are people who, we heard that woman in the opening billboard talking about children being muzzled, which I think is a bit over the top. I mean, in every other jurisdiction, it seems very young children can wear them without complaint. But it's something that we can do relatively simply in spite of those who object. And I mentioned the other day a Cincinnati study where, you know, in America, they have different school districts so that each school district has its own set of rules. So they were able to do the science on those where they mandated full mask wearing for children in schools and others where they didn't. And the improvement in the schools where masks were worn all the time was very, very dramatic.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's one isolated study, Pat, and absolutely the data.
No, but it's interesting because in America, you know, here we have one jurisdiction, the Department of Education rules the roost on every situation. In the United States, you have different school boards, so they were able to, within the same population, to make comparisons as to whether masks worked or not. And the answer was, within that population, when you could compare those unmasked with masked, the masked population were freer of infection than those who were unmasked. And we couldn't do that test here because we have just one regime.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, and that study is very, I think, optimistic. And I think it gives you some optimism that there's going to be some benefit to wearing masks in school children. I think that there's a lot of other studies that are very inconclusive in terms of its impact. And I think one of the big reasons for that, Pat, is that if you look at the age group that we're talking about, that, you know, correct wearing of masks is really important in terms of the effects of masks. And I think the issue that we have at the moment is that we haven't been introducing masks over a period of time for small children, which means that we're going from no mask wearing in a lot of these children to all of a sudden mask wearing. Mm. So I would doubt that there's going to be a lot of very correct mask wearing in this age group. Now, that might come with time. And I think that's one of the issues, I think, with the mandating, I suppose, of mask wearing at the moment, is that maybe we need time for this to bed in, for children to become used to the idea of wearing masks, because we've given no public health guidance in for small children for wearing masks. Now, there's you will see when you go out into supermarkets, there's lots of children of this age group regularly wearing masks, and their parents have introduced that. And that's fine for those children. And maybe it won't be a big jump for them to do in school. But for other children who haven't been mask wearing at all, it's a lot overnight to go from no mask wearing to a lot of mask wearing in school. And I think that it is not that I disagree with the concept of mask wearing in schools, because I do think they can be a useful tool that could have potentially have an impact. But I think it needs to be brought in more slowly so that parents and children have time to get used to the idea.
Everything in this country seems to want to be done slowly rather than properly and quickly. But that's maybe that's the way we are.
Yeah. And I think when you're dealing with children, Pat, it's a different scenario. So like I'm the chair of a board of management of a local school to DCU. And, you know, this kind of mandating overnight decision where things have to happen tomorrow has caused huge anxiety for principals in these schools and also for parents who are worried about if they can't get their child to wear a mask, because this is sometimes the first conversation they've had with children about mask wearing, that what if they're then excluded from the school? Yeah. So I think there's been no preparation. There's been no kind of build up to this. We've been told lots of times that it's been discussed and it's always come back with no recommendations. Yeah, so
look, this is not asking someone, Christine, with all due respect, this is not asking someone to ride a one-wheel bicycle. This is wearing a piece of material across the face. They do it all the time at Halloween. They sometimes wear their superhero masks. I know these are different, but it's not an alien concept. We are not exceptional children. We should not regard ourselves as an exceptional population here. There are children all over the world wearing these masks without a problem. And yet for us, it's some kind of mountain to climb. You know, and I was struck yesterday listening to Kieran Cuddy, a thought that had occurred to me. There are children on the border of Poland and Belarus who are starving in the cold, having travelled many, many miles from war-torn areas with their parents. There are children who have drowned crossing the channel. And we have an issue with wearing a mask.
No, and you see, the thing is, Pat, I don't have an issue with a child wearing a mask. I have a 10-year-old who wears a mask all the time in indoor settings. What I have, I think the issue is, and I'm seeing this from a point of view of a parent, but also the point of view of being on a board of management of a school, which are dealing with these issues now, is that the manner in which it has been brought in overnight very quickly. Yeah. Parents are just asking for time to be able to get their children used to this concept. And that's the difference of asking a child to do something and comply with the recommendation and asking an adult to do it.
So I lose patience though with any kind of hesitancy about this, because the WHO, the CDC, the ECDC, they have all recommended the wearing of masks for children from the age of 5 up. All of them.
And we have decided to do it overnight, Pat. And that's the issue, is that we have decided overnight to do it and have it implemented literally the following day without any time to prepare children that this is going to be the way it is. And I think that, in all fairness to parents who haven't been using masks for children, I think it's about giving them a bit of time to get used to it. And that's the difference. It is not, I absolutely know the benefits of mask wearing, which is why all of my children wear masks in indoor settings. But I do think that for the small number of parents who are having difficulty because they haven't been mask wearing with small children, I do think that a bit of time would have been a better approach.
Now, the minister, you probably heard her yesterday saying that they will, you know, they'll cut a bit of slack. They're not, they introduced the rule, but they don't want confrontations at the school gate. And if a child doesn't turn up with a mask and so on and so forth, they're going to cut a bit of slack for a few days anyway. But we'll see how all of that works out. On ventilation now, we had an extraordinary situation where we had Philip Nolan warning against over-ventilation of schools. I mean, having windows open, this is NPHET now, and then Philip Nolan said HEPA filters have an application in small places with a known source of infection, such as hospitals, but they're not useful in the far corner of a room with 20 to 30 people. This text has come in. In my wife's classroom, she has to have doors and windows open with children wearing heavy coats all day. Even with this, the CO2 monitors are always either orange or red. That's from Tim in Galway. Again, ventilate, they say, but very few directions as to how good air quality in the classroom can be achieved.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think this has been a kind of a bone of contention, I think, for a long number of months now, ever since schools went back and even over the summer in terms of preparing schools. And I think here, you know, I always defer to the experts in this area, Pat, and that there has been a number of expert groups that have recommended that HEPA filters have a role to play in improving air quality in schools. And I think that, you know, while people will say, well, we'll open the doors and open the windows, that's very inconsistent between any individual classroom, depending on the number of windows in the classroom, sure, depending on what side of the building it's on, depending on the weather in terms of is it windy out? Is there any air circulation at all? So I think there's an awful lot of variables that we're relying on when we talk about ventilation being about opening doors and windows. So, you know, I don't know about, I don't think overventilating is a thing. Maybe there's a reference there to opening the windows and doors for too long in some circumstances. But I think that, you know, it was very clear this week that there are a large list of expert groups that say that HEPA filters have a role to play in air quality in schools. And I think that those recommendations from all of those expert groups need to be listened to. Yeah. And as I said, this is not my area of expertise, but I do defer to the expertise that we have, which speaks to HEPA filters being useful.
Yeah, you see, there was a report submitted by an expert group on ventilation, which was chaired by Professor John Wenger. And he said that HEPA filters have a role to play in certain situations. And very critical of Professor Philip Nolan, who says they have no role to play. I mean, this is the confusion that we're getting. Obviously, absolutely. I mean, aircraft are kept safe by HEPA filters. And, you know, how big a HEPA filter do you need for a classroom? And do you need it in every classroom or just a classroom that maybe only has one window and it's, as you say, on the wrong side of the building, so no air passes through naturally? But to dismiss the notion that HEPA filters have no role to play by a member of NEFIT, again, seems bizarre.
Yeah.
By the way, the chair of the expert ventilation group says that Philip Nolan's comments on HEPA filters defy the laws of physics.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, we need to listen to the real experts in all of these areas. I mean, and that's why, you know, while I can't really give a view on HEPA filters because I that's not my area, I would defer to the experts who are absolutely screaming at the top of their lungs that HEPA filters could really play a role in improving air quality in schools. And that's not being listened to. And I think that, you know, there's a long list that was read out on the telly the other night. We all heard the list of the groups that recommend HEPA filters as a way of improving air quality in schools. And that has not been listened to at the moment. And I think that we're too focused on doing other things. We've had a huge focus this week on masks. We've had a huge focus on children not mixing outside of school environments. And we've had a lot of mixed messaging now still about that the transmission between children is not happening in schools. So I don't think this mixed messaging is really doing any of these parents of these children any good. And I don't think it's really promoting trust in the advice that we're getting. So the messaging needs to be very, very clear. And, you know, the government needs to listen to experts.
Some messaging will be quite clear, and that is vaccination. I mean, I know there are people who have all sorts of vaccine hesitancies, but vaccines, it does look, will be made available to children from the age of 5 to 12 before Christmas. Is that really the way to go? Is that the way to creating infection-free schools?
Well, I mean, if we want to drive case numbers down, then vaccination is a really important tool in doing that. I mean, what we've seen over the entirety of our vaccination program is that as we have gone down through the age groups in terms of vaccination, we are seeing an impact on case numbers in those age cohorts. And if you look then at our booster program, where we have started to boost, we are now seeing a difference in those age cohorts. So certainly vaccination is a good tool to be able to reduce case numbers. The 5 to 11-year-olds are a completely unvaccinated population. And if you look at case numbers in the next age group up, where vaccination levels in the 12 to 15-year-olds are up to about 67% now, they're actually very quite high. Their levels are much, much lower. So, and they would tend to mix an awful lot more outside school as teenagers. So I think that you know, I'm glad to see that our supply of vaccinations are going to come in a week earlier. I think that, you know, I'd like to see NIAC make an approval before that date so that we can get ready to roll out those vaccines.
Yeah.
And I do think that they will make a difference quite quickly. And I think that, you know,
by the way, when you talk about NIAC, and they've been, you know, the last go ahead they gave for boosters came fairly quickly, I think, under political pressure. This vaccination for 5 to 12 year olds is taking a lot longer than one might have expected. Do you have any information as to whether that's just because they don't meet that often, or whether they're, you know, challenging some of the assumptions made by the CDC in the United States and the European Medicines Agency?
I think when it comes to vaccination programs for children, there's always extra care taken. And I think that that is warranted, given that when that decision comes, you want parents to be able to trust that that decision has been made with all the information made available to them. My understanding is that NIAC have been, you know, had started reviewing this data quite some time ago, even before the EMA came down with their approval. So they have had the information for some time. But I would, I considering that we're not going to have these vaccines until the 13th of December, I don't think that the urgency is the same as it was for the boosters. Because remember, that decision, we had vaccines sitting there ready to go. So that decision was a bit more urgent, even though we didn't act on it immediately. But the urgency around this decision, we do have time to take our time on this decision, because we physically can't do anything until the 13th of December. But I would like to see that decision coming at least a week beforehand, so that the vaccination for children can at least be operationalized. I understand from interviews I've heard with Paul Reid that the operation around rolling out children's vaccines is something that they're trying to finalize at the moment. So I think there's a lot of getting things ready, but we do need that key decision from NIAC.
We should be ready to go. I mean, we should operate on the assumption that NIAC are going to follow in the wake of their learned colleagues in Europe and the United States and give the go ahead and therefore be ready. You know, if they say no, well, then we just stop everything. But it would be better not to just be starting to get things ready on the 13th or whatever it is. Now, the final thing, and very
out of kilter, would be out of kilter with the rest of Europe and the world in general. So I wouldn't expect a no. I would expect an absolute yes.
The final thing that's back on the agenda, it seems, Christine, is the idea of mandatory vaccination for healthcare workers, people on the front line in nursing homes, in hospitals and so on. What do you think of that? Because it certainly is going to be discussed.
Yeah, I mean, my own view about vaccination, Pat, is that vaccination shouldn't be mandated. I don't agree with mandating vaccination. And the reason for that is that, you know, there has to be a degree of trust in people in terms of vaccination programs. There has to be education, and people have a right to have concerns addressed. And we've tried to do this in lots of forums. We've done it particularly in DCU with students, where we've given them forums to be able to ask the questions. And in lots of cases, after concerns are addressed, people are happy to have vaccinations. So I think that we need to.
We're now into the third year of the pandemic, though. You know, people should have got themselves educated in the healthcare sector, particularly by now.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are many things that you can't do. You can't drive a Dublin City bus if you've only one eye. You know, it's just not safe. So therefore, I'm saying that if you're not vaccinated, you're not safe to be around patients.
Yeah, I completely take that point, Pat. My own view is that mandating vaccines is not the right approach, because I then think that the next time something happens and we have to have a vaccine, people are going to remember that mandating, and people are going to feel that they were forced to do something. I think, you know, I'm surprised that people in the healthcare sector have hesitancy around vaccines, because they see firsthand the impact that non-vaccinated people have from COVID-19. So I'm quite surprised that that is still an issue. As you say, you know, we're coming to the end of the second year of this. So, you know, my own view is if it's not, you know, these are kind of safety issues. If it's not safe for somebody who is not vaccinated to be around a group of people, then their role in that job has to be looked at in terms of whether they're front facing with patients or not. My own view is that mandating these things is not the right way to go, even though I know other countries have done it. But I think that forcing in terms of vaccinations is a place that we've never gone to before. And I don't know that it's going to do any good in at this time.
Christine, thank you very much for joining us. Christine Loscher, Professor of Immunology at Dublin City University's School of Biotechnology.